KALW.
And so how do you usually do laundry?
I do it by hand.
In the bathroom or?
No, in my sink,
in the room, right?
Doing laundry can mean more than just having clean clothes.
And so I hope that the laundry effort, it is about clothes, but when you meet that pragmatic need of people, they'll also start talking to you.
Today, washing a load at San Francisco's Ministry of Laundry. Then, how some people in Point Reyes are fighting to keep their night sky dark.
If we don't do something, my grandchildren won't be able to go out on the wetlands and watch the Milky Way like I do.
A special segment from the Nocturne podcast. I'm Sunni Khalid in for Hana Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Doing laundry can feel like a chore, but for some, the hurdles to washing their clothes are nearly insurmountable. For people who are living on the street or are of very low income, the cost of doing laundry can be prohibitive. It's even harder if you have a disability and live up 3 flights of stairs. This is a problem Zayilo is working to solve. He calls it a ministry of laundry, a religious practice of meeting people on the street, helping them wash their clothes, and through that, listening to their stories. Reporter Alistair Boone is taking us to church.
Outside of San Francisco's Quaker Meeting House in the Tenderloin, there's an unusual kind of worship taking place.
You sure you don't want to wash what you're wearing? We have clothes downstairs. Something you could change into.
Zayilo has been a congregant at the Meeting House for 10 years. But in January, he started up his own ministry, right there on the sidewalk in front of the church.
For an hour, I have the detergent. I'm going to pay for it. We just go to the 8th Street Laundry and I pay for it. So you just got to get back in like an hour if you can get back.
Okay.
His project is called Holy Water. The goal is to try to tackle one simple problem experienced by unhoused people in San Francisco, doing laundry. His folding table is an unassuming pulpit amongst the chaos of the street. He catches people as they wander through a haze of loud music and sirens and the crush of life outside. People stop to rest or ask what he's doing.
I have a bag. Do you need a bag to bring it in?
Yeah.
Here, I have a bag, actually, if you need one.
And like that, he's got a taker.
Because I never get my laundry done.
If you can go like in the next, do you think you can be back like in the next half hour or so?
Maybe, yeah.
That's Grace. We're only using her first name out of respect for her safety as a woman in the process of getting off the street. Laundry can be an immense burden for people like Grace. For one, laundromats in San Francisco are disappearing. At least 40 have closed since 2018. And laundry is expensive. The place about a block from the Meeting House charges more than $10 for a single load.
Why? Because they're vulnerable populations and because you can. Because it's an essential service. Because we're inflating prices at the same time that about 20% of the laundromats in San Francisco over the past 10 plus years have closed. Which means you have to go further and you don't have a choice as to what you're going to pay.
Zay works at the intersection of the city's homeless crisis and its laundry crisis. I first met him when we worked for the same nonprofit a couple years back. He knows firsthand how difficult it can be to access this essential service.
I grew up what I like to affectionately refer to as upper-lower class. So, you know, you don't really have any direct experience with the system, but you're, you know, 1 or 2 paychecks away.
This is literally what happened to Zay. In 2013, he was riding an Amtrak train from Chicago to San Francisco when his employer stopped payment on his last check. This meant that when he got to San Francisco, he didn't have enough money to rent an apartment. So he had to check in to MSC South, San Francisco's largest homeless shelter.
But I never actually checked into a shelter. So my brain, when I'm thinking, check into a shelter, it's like the Holiday Inn. You're like, you go up to a desk, you make a reservation, they give you a key to a room or a bed or something.
But the city shelter system is not like a Holiday Inn. At times, there have been hundreds of people on the wait list for San Francisco's 3 90-day shelters. And the people on the wait list can try for a bed at an overnight shelter instead.
But those people could not use the laundry facilities. Only the people that had 90-day beds.
Even for those with longer-term beds, a limited number of people can do laundry every night. And those slots fill up fast.
If it's full, then you have to wait. Let's say you have an interview the next day. Tough luck. If you don't have the money to pay for a laundromat outside of the shelter, you just have to wait to the next day and rinse and repeat the same cycle. And then it consumes your next day because you know you have to be back, et cetera, et cetera.
Zay ultimately got his own apartment this year, but his experience in the shelter system showed him where some of the gaps are. He studied entrepreneurial ministry in seminary school, which to him was all about applying the framework of pastoral care to pressing social problems.
Really, the central thing that you're doing is listening to people. And so I hope that the laundry effort, it is about clothes, but when you meet that pragmatic need of people, they'll also start talking to you.
He believes that if policymakers actually listen to unhoused people and what they say they need, they could build more effective solutions to homelessness. Tending to his laundry table on 9th Street, people ask Zay all sorts of questions.
Right now, I'm not running any surveys. No, my only survey is detergent and clothes right now.
He buys someone a cheeseburger and helps several people sign up for the adult shelter wait list. Zay asks everyone he talks to whether they want to come back with their clothes and do some laundry. Many people say yes and don't come back. But others do. Faith rewarded.
She's back! Yes!
Did I get on time?
You did very much so. You are so on time. Yay!
I won the prize.
That's Grace again.
All right.
That's a prize.
I am glad that you came back.
She's back with two hefty laundry bags they had given her earlier that morning, full of clothes. One with lights and one with darks.
Wow. So what I was going to do is walk over. Let me put the bag in here. I'm going to leave the table here. And we'll just go now so you don't have to wait.
Okay.
They walk to the 8th Street Laundry, just a block and a half away.
And so how do you usually do laundry?
I do it by hand.
In the bathroom?
No, in my sink.
In the room, right?
Yeah.
Grace recently moved into low-income housing nearby. She says she has piles of clothes all around her room. There are no laundry services in the building, and there's no visitors allowed, which means no one can come help her with the basic chores that can get overwhelming when you're just coming off the street.
Put this in here. These are light. I'm going to go ahead and wash this, but I'm not going to dry it in Santa Clara.
At the laundromat, Grace pulls her clothes out of the bags and loads them into two machines. She's got some precious items like hand-me-downs and garments made out of delicate fabrics.
This is from my mother, and this other one is a wonderful dress.
Zay feeds cash into the change machine and gets quarters out. Enough for two washes and an hour of dry time. $13.50 in total.
Here we go. Off to the races.
So far, Zay is paying out of pocket for all the costs associated with holy water. He says he spent something like $1,200 in total on laundry bags, detergent, and washer and dryer time, plus some signage for his folding table. He has plans to form a nonprofit by the end of the year so he can start applying for grants to help fund his work. But the most important part of holy water to Zay doesn't cost money. It's the simple intimacy of listening to what somebody needs and helping them meet those needs.
That's part of the power shift for people to tell you what they actually need. And the long-term impacts of that is we can actually start shaping systems to meet people's needs rather than from what we think people need, which is exactly what has happened and we've done for the past few decades, and look at the outcome.
That's what his ministry is all about, using laundry as a thread, a tether to a brighter future. In San Francisco, I'm Alistair Boone for Cross Currents.
Alistair is a recent Audio Academy graduate, and you can find more of her work at kalw.org/crosscurrents. And Zay Illa will be at his laundry table every other Sunday outside the Quaker Meeting House in San Francisco's Tenderloin. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Sunni Khalid in for Hana Baba. When I say atmospheric pollution, some people will think of fossil fuel emissions or industrial chemicals or large-scale agriculture. But some folks just a little north of us in Point Reyes are considering how we're polluting our night sky with light. Today and tomorrow, we're bringing you a story from the Nocturne podcast. It's part one of Noctalgia. Here's the host, Vanessa Lowe.
As the world changes around us, how do we balance grief and gratitude? How do we stay connected enough to what we love to be able to mobilize the energy and spirit to fight for it? Some people in Point Reyes Station in Northern California are acutely aware of what they have, what they could lose, and why it matters. So they've banded together, harnessing the power of community to do what they can.
Hi.
Hello. Dawn.
Hey.
How's it going?
Okay. How are you, man?
Hey. Hi.
Oh, Gail, nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
Right. How about that?
We're at the edge of the Giacomini Wetlands in Point Reyes Station. Point Reyes has a population of 895 people and sits on the edge of the dramatic and pristine Point Reyes National Seashore. There used to be a working dairy farm on this site, but the land was purchased around 15 years ago by the National Park Service, restored, and turned into federally protected public lands. It's an uncharacteristically warm and clear night in October, and we're gathering for one of Don Jolly's monthly stargazing events. This is the story of a small town, or really a group of small towns, in West Marin. No, scratch that. It's the story of people, individual people, paying attention and loving and worrying and ultimately working together to hold on to something precious.
Well, we'll give it some time. Let it get dark. Hi there. Welcome.
This is Don Jolly.
I'm going to point some things out in the sky. We'll do a 360-degree view. We'll start in the north like I always do. It's a good way to get our bearings. I've been doing this for 2 years with the Dark Sky West Marin effort, and formerly I was a school teacher in Bolinas, and I used to do this kind of work with my students monthly for some 3 decades. I'm now semi-retired and was conscripted by Dark Sky West Marin to come out and serve as the public education component.
Dark Sky West Marin is a local group created by two Point Reyes residents, Peggy Day and Laura Arndt, in 2020, when folks in Point Reyes and the neighboring villages started noticing and talking about the fact that the lights all around their communities had become a lot brighter and, frankly, annoying. Dark Sky West Marin has two goals: to reduce light pollution in the area through education and to become a designated Dark Sky community with recognition from Dark Sky International. Becoming a Dark Sky community means a public commitment to rolling back light pollution and maintaining dark skies. Peggy and Laura enlisted Don early on in order to help connect people to the night sky that's still visible here, unlike in most communities around the U.S. Once a month, Peggy posts the likely dates for Don's stargazing event, which is planned to happen right before the new moon, and viewers are advised to check the website regularly for the exact date, which is affected by fog and other weather conditions.
Thank you for coming. And usually at this time, we have either Laura Arndt or Peggy Day, who are the two real progenitors of this whole project, to get a dark sky recognition for West Marin under auspices of the Point Reyes Village Association. And they have been on this project for a couple of years now. It's a slow process, so thank you all for coming and supporting Dark Sky West Marin. I'm going to park here in the middle and we'll get rolling. All right, I like to start in the north because the north gives me my bearings, and from those bearings then I can operate in a more informed way 360 degrees around the sky, and I can kind of get my sense of how all this thing is rotating and moving in response to our planet's movements. This is the Big Dipper, colloquial known, and it's part of a larger group of stars called Ursa Major, the Great Bear, and it's arguably the most widely recognized figure in the sky. Every culture has its own attachment, its own name, its own recognition, but it's remarkable how many cultures in this world, not only now but historically, associate that with a bear. These were named as the seven sages in the Hindu tradition. The Ojibwe in North America saw these as the birds of summer. Right? Again, these stars are visible every night, every hour to anybody in the Northern Hemisphere. And so they have a lot of attachments. A lot of cultures have attached meaning and recognition and stories to this group of stars, what we call collectively the circumpolar stars. You can see this dim part of the Milky Way, and in a few moments we'll look at the other end of the Milky Way. You'll notice how dim it is here. That's because you're looking out to the edge of the Milky Way in that direction. If you can picture that, we are in the Milky Way. We're in this disk of stars, this spiral disk shaped like a pinwheel, a big flat pinwheel. And our sun is one of the billions of stars that are in that pinwheel. Our sun belongs to the Milky Way. The Milky Way is not this just this remote thing out here. This is our home. We belong to this whole conglomerate of stars. This is Main Street. We're in that galaxy. And kind of hard to picture or imagine that, but as we sit in the galaxy from our vantage point, we look this way, we're looking out toward the edge of the galaxy. Go that way about, oh, I think it's something like 20,000 light years.
Good evening, you glittering stars.
This is Peggy Day, one of the two people who spearheaded the effort to preserve and protect the night sky over their home. It's 6 months before that October stargazing party, and we're at the Dance Palace in Point Reyes Station, which is the community center. And this is the first community meeting about the effort to make West Marin an official dark sky community. The place is packed.
Tonight and all of this week, dark sky lovers around the world are gathered together in places like Croatia, South America, New Zealand, Chile, and a tiny little island off the north coast of Wales called Bardsley Island. We're all celebrating International Dark Sky Week at the same time. West Marin hopes to become a dark sky designation. We're still in the planning stages, and we include the Point Reyes National Seashore, Stinson Beach, Bolinas, Olema, Nicasio, Inverness Park, Inverness, Marshall, Dillon Beach, Tamales, the entire San Geronimo Valley, as well as Point Reyes Station. This area has been committed to the preservation of the night sky for a long time.
But things started getting real only in the last couple of years.
I'm Peggy Day, and I live in Point Reyes Station. It was originally a railroad town. It wasn't a town until they put in a narrow gauge railroad, late 1800s, to transport the milk and the butter and the cheese from the ranches out here to San Francisco. It's just a beautiful area, beautiful beaches and mountains and valleys and hiking trails.
How long have you lived here?
50 years.
50?
Yeah. I think I'll stay. During the week, I know nearly everybody I see in the grocery store. I know their stories, their struggles, their happinesses, you know, and whenever somebody in town is struggling with something, the other people in town rise up and take care of them. We're at West Marin School, where seven of my grandchildren have gone or will go. We're on Highway 1. It cuts right through Point Reyes Station. And so there's a lot of traffic in this direction. Okay, we could walk up here and I could show you a couple of things.
Peggy and I walk around a bit, with her pointing out different streetlights and describing how some of them had been shining into drivers' eyes on the road, and others glaring into houses and even into people's bedrooms, making it hard for them to sleep.
I'm pointing out the streetlights because that's our main problem. We have 31 of them in town. We have 150 in the dark sky zone that we're planning.
What happened in West Marin, as in many communities around the country, is that around 8 to 10 years ago, the county switched all the streetlights from high-pressure sodium lights to cheaper, more energy-efficient LEDs. But LEDs are very different than the old lighting, with more glare, harmful blue light, and a tendency to scatter light into the atmosphere, creating sky glow.
I'm finding from the International Dark Sky folks that the worldwide problem is street lamps. So that's our biggest focus going forward. I spent most of my life being an emergency nurse in Marin County in San Francisco and raising three daughters. After I retired, I became a member of the Village Association here. You know, we're kind of dedicating
to preserving the agricultural and rural nature of this town. That means it's 6 o'clock.
Does it go off every hour?
It goes off at noon and at 6 every day. It shocks everybody because a lot of people forget this is a cow town when they come out here to kind of do their touristy thing. You know? But anyway, we decided that the lighting problem was big enough for us to tackle it. We formed a lighting committee and we walked around town. This was in September of 2020.
When Peggy says we, she mostly means herself and Laura Arndt, a fellow member of the Point Reyes Village Association.
Laura is our Venus, our brightest star. Our Venus introduced us all to the International Dark Sky Association. Please welcome Laura Arndt.
Hi, everybody. It's great to see everyone here and to be here. I'm just going to say a few words about light bulbs and light fixtures. International Dark Sky recommends using a soft or a warm light bulb.
The more you talk to people, it's, you know, say a neighbor or Inverness is bothered by Marshall's lights, Marshall's bothered by Inverness lights, Inverness Park is bothered by lights in Point Reyes Station. You know, everyone got real excited when they realized there was a discussion going on about it.
Peggy and Laura let the community know what they found. And for the most part, people were very responsive once they learned about the problem and how simple it is to fix it. But that initial effort to curb light trespass into people's homes quickly led to a much more serious and startling realization.
It's probably your dinner time, and we understand it's a work and a school night, so we packed a lot of information into very small time. We aim to get you back into orbit by 7:30. First, let's launch a video called Losing the Dark from the International Dark Sky Association.
We live on the surface of a planet spinning on its axis once every 24 hours. Its rhythms of day and night are embedded in the biological makeup of all life. Until just over a century ago, our night skies were very dark. Now, even the wilderness is invaded by light. We are losing the dark of night at the speed of light. Light pollution threatens the health of every living thing on Earth. Lights at night disrupt plant growth, contribute to the deaths of countless land and sea animals, migrating birds crash into illuminated buildings. Newly hatched sea turtles mistake the glow of electric lights for the shimmer of the ocean's surface.
We are already losing our night sky. We're losing our ability to see the night sky when we go out to do the stargazing. A third of the southern sky is a white dome. We can't see any stars out that way. And in my personal experience in town, having the bank light up like a gymnasium, the school light up, and then some people who own rental houses are putting out intense lights that pierce through to the ridge across the way. It had me scared that we're losing it. And if we don't do something, my grandchildren won't be able to go out on the wetlands and watch the Milky Way like I do.
Okay, let's go a little further to the left.
The Milky Way.
In this direction, we're looking at the center of our galaxy. And that's why the Milky Way appears so much brighter here.
That was part one of the Nocturne's Noctalgia episode, produced by Vanessa Lowe. Tune in tomorrow. We'll learn how a deep connection to the night sky banded together a community in a common goal of preservation.
Every physical aspect of my world is comprised of elements that came from out there, most of which were forged in the bellies of stars. And so when I look at the sky, I'm not looking at some remote, fiery, scientifically arcane structures. I'm looking at my home.
Part two of Noctalgia. That's tomorrow morning at 11. Now, before we go, let's listen to some new music from a local band. This is San Francisco's Sad Snack, and they will perform at Berkeley's 924 Gilman this Saturday. Today's team includes Aru Nair, Zen Iqbal, Hussein Khan, James Rollins, Ganity Joe Johnson, Victor Tentz, Shireen Adel, Marissa Ortega-Welch, Angela Johnston, and Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Sunni Khalid.